This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here on episode 39 of the 90 Feet From Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are presented by Underdog Fantasy, and I am your host, Joe Orico. You guys can check me out over on Twitter at JoeOrico99. That's where I share out all of my new work, whether it be these podcasts, any articles that I write, updates to Patreon. All of that does get shared out through JoeOrico99. So go check me out over there. And also, like I mentioned, we are brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. It is the easiest place to play fantasy sports, and it's also the fastest growing app in the industry. It's very easy to see why. The higher and lower games are very fun. The pick'ems, you choose between 2 to 5 players and build your own pick'em entries. There are rivals picks where you pit 2 players against each other. So much stuff for you guys to be checking out at Underdog. If you guys use my code Joe99 on your first time deposit, you'll get a bonus of up to $250 in cash, as well as a special pick to claim on that first-time deposit. There's a link in the description of the episode. If you guys haven't checked out Underdog, highly recommend it. Go get yourself some extra goodies when you use my code Joe99. Guys, we are back. It was a bit of a break for me over the weekend, as you guys know, or maybe you don't. I am Canadian. I am up here in Toronto, so we had the holiday-long weekend. Took Saturday off, took Sunday off, and I even took Monday off. First time I haven't done a show on a Monday since March of 2022. It felt very weird as the weekend turned into Monday to not be doing a show, but I was away with some friends. We were at a cottage. We were doing some drinking. We were hanging out by the beach. It was a nice reset right at the 50% mark of the season, really, to just, you know, like I said, reset the batteries and just kind of take a little bit of a mental pause from Twitter and from baseball in general. But spent the last 12 hours or so kind of catching up on what we missed over the weekend. So today we are going to be kind of recapping all the major points that took place from Saturday, Sunday, and even Monday. Monday, there's only a couple games, but there's still a couple things to talk about. So we're going to do all that. And then later on, like we usually do, we are going to touch on the waiver wire, talk about the popular ads and drops of the day. But I think we'll start off. We'll go Saturday, and then we'll go to Sunday, and then Monday. Let's kick it off with Pablo Lopez. I think it's fair to say that he is pretty much all the way back. Now, he did face a couple of fairly softball opponents in his last two outings, Oakland and Seattle, in Seattle of all places. Actually, both of those games were in those fairly pitcher-friendly parks. But 14 innings, he had 23 strikeouts, 1 run combined in those two games. He got the victory in both of them. We've been banging the drum here, and I think pretty much everybody in fantasy, in the fantasy world, has been saying it for a very long time. The Pablo Lopez was one of the more obvious kind of buy lows. Just if you dug deeper on the numbers, there was nothing really wrong with him. In fact, like, the command is probably better than we've ever seen it. The walk rate is lower than it's ever been from him. The strikeouts are still really good. He's not allowing a ton of hard contact. The barrel rate slightly increased from last year, but overall, there's nothing that you could really look at and say Pablo Lopez was deserving of that 5-plus ERA. He's brought it down to 4.88, and if you look at those supporting metrics we love to look at, the xFIPs of the world, the xERAs, all of them are very good. 3.16 xFIP, he has a 3.10 Sierra, and a 3.28 xERA. That goes along with that lovely 23.1 strikeout minus walk rate, and we have talked about that a lot. Once you're in the 20-plus percent range, you're doing some things very, very well. Any even tick, 20.2, 20.4% above that is just incredible. Once you're into the 23% range here, he is ninth among all qualified pitchers in baseball, strikeout minus walk. It's Crochet, Flaherty, Sale, Glasnow, Sonny Gray, Scooble, Dylan Cease, Joe Ryan, and then Pablo Lopez there at the number nine spot. There's a lot to really like about him, and that's why, you know, he was a very nice buy. He was going through one of the worst stretches probably of his career there. Seven runs. It was pretty bad stuff. The strikeouts weren't really what we were expecting in that time frame either. 4, 5, and 3. There was a 6-walk outing. There was some really bad stuff in there. So I understand people who were very nervous about him. Maybe were thinking it's just going to be a down year. But when the underlying data is so strong, it's hard to be all that concerned. And there's honestly a chance if people are going to use like the narrative of, well, it was a couple of bad teams he was facing. The ERA is still 4.88. You might be able to still buy a little bit lower on him than you should. In fact, you probably can. A lot of people, based on the questions I get, will cite ERA and they'll cite runs and RBI and things that are not really that important. And if people are going to be saying, well, Pablo has a 4.88 ERA, I don't know how much I can trust him. Yeah, Oakland and Seattle, sure, it's great he had good outings, but those teams both suck. I mean, that's kind of a valid point, but at the same time, there's just so much to like here with Pablo that those things are like, well, okay, he did it against Oakland and Seattle, but even if he had faced the tougher teams based on what we've seen these last couple of outings, I don't think he would have got blown up. Just like, oh, that 14 strikeout game against Oakland, he would have got blown up if it was any other team. Like, no, it's probably, you know, you want to make an equivalency of a good team, maybe it's 8 or 9 strikeouts. 6 innings of 1-run ball with 9 strikeouts against Seattle, you want to say against a regular team, maybe that doesn't equate because they strike out so much and the park is so pitcher-friendly. There are a lot of different ways you can kind of maneuver the trade talks to make it so that Pablo is still, well, he's still kind of a buy low, he's still not that great, whatever. And if you can pull that off, I would absolutely be doing it. I'm not worried at all. I know that that stretch there for about a month, maybe even longer than a month, was almost impossible to deal with. He really did hurt you. But going forward, I wouldn't expect to see any stretches like that from Pablo Lopez. I would be shocked if he has another game where he walks more than 2 or 3 batters this season. Really, I think he is one of the better pitchers in baseball. At worst, I'd say he's probably about top 20 or so. And I think that's probably even maybe selling him a little bit short. He's really good. And if there's any opportunity to still be buying on him, I would be doing it. Let's move on to talk about Heston Kjerstad. So he hit a grand slam on Saturday. He also had a couple walks and was hit by a pitch, so he was on base 4 times. The way they've used him is a little bit weird. So he sat against Scherzer, and then he played against a left-handed pitcher the following day. I thought this was going to be more of a strong side platoon thing, and then maybe he gets in against the odd lefty. It was very weird to see him sitting against a righty, get into the lineup against a lefty, because it kind of throws us for a loop, really, because we were expecting one thing. And now there's a bit of an unpredictability factor with Kjerstad. Not based on him. I think that he is really an excellent, excellent player. And there's something we're going to talk about a couple times today because we're going to bring up Wyatt Langford later on. These guys that come up and then struggle initially and then go back down, once they're called up for the second or sometimes even the third time, it seems like a lot of the time those guys do have success. Once they've had that little bit of a taste and they see the things they need to adjust upon, and in Kjerstad's case, it also means he's getting a little bit more playing time now. He's been really, really solid since he's been called up. He's 7-for-16 with a couple of homers. He's been mostly in the middle of the order. They did have him batting 8th, not yesterday, because they didn't play yesterday, but on Sunday, he was batting 8th, went 2-for-4 again. I don't see a world where they keep him on the bench very often going forward. When you got this kind of talent and he's coming up and he's actually producing for you, I don't think there's many reasons that Baltimore can give at this point to not play him pretty much every single day. Is he going to sit the odd time? Yeah. And if you look at roster resource, they still have him as a bench bat, not even colored in as a platoon bat, which I don't really agree with. I do think that we're going to see him playing pretty regularly, as long as we don't see massive, massive struggles. Because the thing with the Orioles is that they have a plethora of options at pretty much every position. If you look in the minor leagues, they have like another all-star team worth of prospects waiting to get called up. But I think Kjerstad is a pretty safe investment, especially if you're in a daily changes league and you don't have to worry about so much of the unpredictability. There's still some unpredictability there. But if you're setting a weekly lineup league and you're putting Kjerstad in and Baltimore decides to play him twice, then that's going to be brutal. But if you're in a daily league and you see he's in the lineup, okay, I put him in the lineup. Baltimore wants to put him on the bench, okay, I put him on my bench. In that situation, it's really a lot easier, and he's still only 39% rostered on Yahoo, despite the good things we've seen since he's come up. So I think if you're still seeing him out there, you need a little bit of outfield help. He is one of the better options that you can find, especially if you consider the lineup context and the fact that he has batted 5th in the majority of the games he's played. You're in the middle of that order, which is top five in lineup in baseball at worst. Good things are going to happen to you, and you've seen it already. Eight ribbies over his 16 at-bats, and yes, there was a grand slam in there, but there was a three RBI game. He had an RBI on Sunday as well. There's going to be a lot of fantasy goodness coming from Heston Kjerstad, even if he's only playing 4 or 5 days a week. So in those weekly lineups, like let's say you're in a, excuse me, a 10-team league where you set your lineups weekly, that's a little bit tricky because there are just so many good options in a 10-team league, and there are going to be a lot of guys who you know are playing every single day, or at worst, 6 days. With Kjerstad, there might be some unpredictability. I'm hoping that over the next week or two, we start to see a more regular role and a more regular lineup spot because he, like I said, he's been batting fifth most of the time. But there was one game where he was seventh. There was one game where he was eighth. So I do want to see what the patterns become with Kjerstad before I'm fully bought in from like an all formats point of view. But I think pretty much every league at this point, unless it's, like I said, those really shallow weekly leagues, it's going to be tricky. But pretty much everywhere at this point, if you're seeing Heston Kjerstad still out there, and you are still seeing him out there at 39%, he's still available in a lot of leagues, I would pick him up because the potential is just through the roof. And if he does play every day batting fifth in that lineup, could be one of the better pickups of the second half. So definitely somebody to keep a very close eye on. And I would say if you have the room, jump on him now before it's too late. But somebody else we got to talk about because it has been a really great run for him. And I actually wrote him up on Patreon last week, and it's Byron Buxton. Man, I don't really know what to make of him, but he is in a really great run right now. Over the last month, he's a top 45 player. The last 2 weeks, he's a top 20 player. Now, if you look at that last 30-day sample size, 24 for his last 81 with 15 runs, 5 homers, 19 ribbies, and I think the big thing is that he has 3 steals in the last month, really. Batting 296 in that time, like that's all good. The whole line overall is really good. I just find it hard to trust Byron Buxton as far as I could throw him, really. People are adding him a lot, and if you look at today, he's not one of the top added players, but 1,400 ads at the time of recording. We probably get to the 1,600 ad range. He's up to 66% on Yahoo, which is a 7% jump from last week, and I get there being some interest, but I just don't trust him. I don't trust him to A, stay healthy, and B, keep up the production, especially when you've seen such a dramatic decline in the numbers. The exit velocities are down. The barrel rate is drastically down. We talked about this last week. It's gotten a little bit better. It's up to 9.8%, but it's still the first time we've seen a single-digit barrel rate from him going back since 2019. Hard hit, again, has come up a little bit now, but it's still not quite what we were getting from him in 2021 and in 2022. In those seasons where I thought that he was really looking like he was going to be a superstar if he was able to stay healthy, but that's another thing to go along with the decrease in performance. The health is just not something that we can really trust. You see this kind of run from Byron Buxton, and I say, if somebody is going to be willing to trade for him, if somebody sees this, they need some outfield help, they're willing to buy in, maybe they're a Minnesota fan or something, I'd be getting off of him. He doesn't get on base a lot at all, 3.9% walk rate. The steals, I don't think they're going to come consistently. He's attempted 7 stolen bases now through the first half. Maybe we see him get to 10 steals, 10, 11 steals if things work out right. But I wouldn't be surprised either if Byron Buxton, there's something there that the team says, you know what, we're taking enough chances as it is. We want to keep you healthy. I don't want to see you running. And I think there's a very good chance of that. And even if it's not so severe, he's not going to be a massive asset one way or the other in terms of stolen bases. Maybe we get best case scenario. If he really, really picks it up, maybe you get 15. But that would shock me. If Byron Buxton is anywhere over 11, 12 steals, I'd be pretty shocked. The batting average isn't great. He's hitting 260 with a 331 batting average on balls in play. I think he's probably closer to a 230, 240 hitter. It's the power, really, that was always the big appeal with Byron Buxton, and that hasn't been there this season. It's come around a little more as of late. But again, do we trust this to keep up for a guy who has all the injury problems, who does have declining power metrics, quality of contact's not the greatest? I just think there's a lot of problems here with buying into Byron Buxton based off of a couple of hot weeks. How many players this year have had hot weeks that we, or a couple of weeks, even longer than that, longer stretches, and then everybody fully buys into them? Elliot Ramos, I know he had a decent weekend, but he was great, and then he was terrible, and then a couple good games again. If you sold high on Ramos during that time frame, I think you're pretty happy. Kind of a similar thing with Buxton. Obviously, different players, very different stages of their careers. But you see that stretch where it's like, I don't think I buy this. I don't really know if there's anything to support what's going on here. The guys hit 4 home runs in the last week, but it's like a Kevin Pillar thing from earlier in the season. I talked about this couple months ago. I might have even been on the old show, or I'm not even sure when it was exactly, but whenever Kevin Pillar had that really hot week or two, Somebody traded him for Julio Rodriguez. And while Julio hasn't been so great, that's a trade you have to make every single time. I'm not sure how serious the league was. Yahoo has a setting, an option on the website where you can see if you put in Freddie Freeman or you put in Rafael Devers, you can see who these guys were traded for in the last day. It's a pretty good feature just to see generally where value is. But you can capitalize when there are these hot weeks that are unexpected and not supported by a lot of the data. And with Buxton, I think a lot of it does come down to the injury risk. Because if Buxton was a guy who played 120, 130 games a year, we saw the dip in quality of contact earlier on. Now it's picking up a little bit. Maybe you'd say, okay, I trust Byron Buxton. I'll pick him up. I'll drop somebody. In this situation, like if you have a spot where you're not using anybody, you have one of those streaming spots, I guess it doesn't hurt to pick him up. I just don't really believe that this is sustainable. I think with the way he strikes out, with all of the problems, there's so many problems with him. I just can't get that excited. I really can't. This is a guy who's played more than 100 games one time. It was 7 years ago. I'm just always going to be waiting for something to happen injury-wise. And then, like we said, the performance as a whole is just really not that great. I know it's been good over the last little while, but I would capitalize on that if you can and try and sell high. I just really don't expect Byron Buxton to just all of a sudden now be back to who we thought he was, and now he's healthy and stealing bases again. There's a chance that he's able to figure that out, but at this stage of his career, I'm going to be more skeptical than optimistic regarding Byron Buxton's outlook. I said we were going to talk about him earlier, and let's get to Wyatt Langford. He hit for the cycle over the weekend. It's been really great to see his production over the last while. He is a top 20 player over the last 2 weeks. Over the last month, he is nearly a top 50 player. He's hitting the ball out of the yard. We didn't see that for so long, and now we've seen 3 home runs over the last, 10 days he's hit. It's like I mentioned with Kierstad, guys who come up, and this is also why I'm going to be pretty interested whenever Jackson Holliday does come back. I think it, based on the injury and everything and the way the Orioles are going, they don't really have room for him anyway. This is probably more of a next year problem. But I think these guys who come up and struggle, get sent back down and then come up, a lot of the time we're seeing great things from them. And Wyatt Langford is the most recent example of that. The thing with Langford, honestly, before he went down, it wasn't like he was terrible. It's not like he was batting a .185, striking out 30% of the time. It was like a 20% strikeout rate, 22 maybe, with like an 8% walk rate. He was hitting like 250, 240. It wasn't great, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't as bad as a lot of people thought it was. Now, since he's returned, he's been just excellent, and I don't think you're going to find him on many waiver wires, but if you are finding him anywhere, it's an easy pickup. And he was available in a lot of leagues for a while because he went down into the, I think, in the 60-some-odd percent range. People were really giving up. Now he's back up to 85, so it's a lot harder outside of shallow leagues. But even in a really shallow league, 10-team, even in an 8-team league, I think you could make the argument that what we're going to see in the second half from Langford should be really, really excellent. People kind of throw away all of the minor league data once there's a little bit of major league data to look at. But people kind of just moved on very quickly from the fact that Langford was one of the best hitting prospects of the last decade or so. I know he didn't spend a lot of time in the minors, but like 20-plus percent walk rates, massive power and speed, hitting for crazy high batting averages. The WRC plus numbers he was putting up throughout his time in the minors, and yes, it was relatively small sample sizes at each of these places. 194, 192, 224, 177. The guy's a tank. The guy's a complete unit. He's not even striking out 20% of the time at this point. It's at 19.2, solid walk rate. There's a lot to really like, and I think that Rangers lineup, as much as it has been a little bit iffy so far, Corey Seager, I think he took a pitch on the hand this weekend. I think that's been like literally just everybody, as a side note. Every good player recently, it seems like they get hit on the hand with a pitch. It was Mookie. We saw it with Vlad on the weekend as well. So that would be bad if there is anything really serious there. They've said that the MRI was negative on Corey Seager, and he's going to be back day-to-day. I think this lineup is going to do a lot better things in the second half, and Wyatt Langford is probably going to be no small part of that. I really think that this guy, like heading into next year, Wyatt Langford, I'm not sure where the draft price is going to be because that's probably going to really depend on what we see over the second half of the season. But he was like a top 70, 80 player in some rooms this year. If we see Wyatt Langford smash down the stretch like I expect him to, we might see a top 4-round Wyatt Langford, top 3 or 4 rounds, especially in the high-stakes NFBC world where upside is always king. That's why even Elly De La Cruz, who struggled pretty mightily down the stretch last season, ended up as a second-round pick, and it worked out. And I'll make no bones, like, I was very much out on Elly as a second-round pick, but sometimes those upside guys really do work out. And the upside, we're talking Langford, it's through the roof. It is potentially, especially if he does start to run a little bit more. I'd like to see some more stolen bases, but like, let's say he gets to 20 stolen bases. This is a guy who could be a first-round fantasy value very, very, very easily. I think we could see 25 to 30 homers, 20 steals. He could hit close to 300, I think, in a good lineup. This is a guy where I think it's a must roster player if you're seeing him even in the shallowest of leagues, and it's a really nice draft target for 2025. And I will say, even though this is going to be forgotten about for sure, because I'm saying it and it's July the 2nd here.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You need to kind of, you know, not that you need to, but for somebody like myself who drafts throughout the entire offseason, I'm going to start drafting probably in October, which I know sounds insane, but that's where you'll get slightly better prices on these guys. As draft season goes along, and you get into December, you flip the calendar over to 2025, and then you get into February, and then the high stakes in March, those guys are going to get more and more expensive. So we see Wyatt Langford have a great season down the stretch. He's going to be pretty expensive either way. But I would expect, based on the last couple of years' worth of trends, we're going to see that price start to move as draft season goes along next year in the offseason. So if you want Wyatt Langford and you are somebody who drafts early and you're in a November draft and you're saying, I kind of want him, but he's a little pricey, I would take him because you're not going to get him at a cheaper price as the draft season goes along, unless we get some kind of bad injury news or something. But I really think that he's going to have a massive second half, and I think that going into 2025, he is potentially going to be a first-round player next season, not in terms of where he's drafted, but in terms of where he finishes. If Wyatt Langford pulls a Julio, pulls a Bobby Witt, pulls a Corbin Carroll, and finishes as a first-round player next year, and even if you just look at the second-half numbers this year, if he's a first-round player in the second half, wouldn't surprise me at all. Like I said, top 20 player the last 2 weeks, hit for the cycle over the weekend. The raw talent is ridiculous. There's a lot to really, really like with Wyatt Langford. I might be a little bit getting a little bit too high on him, but I think truly, like, he could be a number one overall fantasy player over the next couple of seasons. I'm not saying it's going to happen this year. Over the next couple of seasons, Wyatt Langford could very well be a number one overall type of player. Let's talk about Taj Bradley. He gave you another great outing over the weekend against the Nationals. 5 2/3 of shutout ball with 11 strikeouts and 2 walks. He also picked up the victory. He's turned his season right around. If you look over the last 5 starts, 29 innings with 40 strikeouts, a 1.24 ERA, and a 1.00 whip. His ERA has gone from 5.81 down to 3.42 in that time frame. I was really, really aggressively buying low on him, and I'm very happy that we did. We talked about it a ton on the show here, but really, when it's just those strikeouts. When you're seeing those strikeouts come, as long as they're not coming with a ridiculous walk rate, and his walks are a little high at 8.8%, but when you have a 31.6 strikeout rate, you know, we'd mentioned with Pablo Lopez earlier that 23% strikeout minus walk rate, it's in the top 10 of the league. Taj Bradley does not qualify because he doesn't have enough innings to qualify on the leaderboard, but he would slot in right behind Pablo Lopez as the 10th pitcher in terms of strikeout minus walk rate. He's just shy of qualifying. He doesn't have the innings, but that just goes to show you like how talented he is on a per inning, per game basis. Those strikeouts are so rare to come across, and also with really great underlying data. The thing that stops him, I think, or stops a lot of people, is that he still has a bit of a home run problem. But that's got progressively better throughout the course of the season. When I mentioned him in a tweet 5 weeks ago before this start, or maybe it wasn't quite a full 5 weeks, but I talked about how he's allowing an insane amount of home runs. It was a 21.2 homer to fly ball, 2.39 homers per nine. Those numbers have come down to 17.5 homer to fly ball, 1.63 homer per nine. They're still not good. Overall, those numbers are still very, very high. But he has really brought them down because they were unsustainably high. Like the same thing with Joe Ryan last year, when Joe Ryan was allowing 6 home runs, then 4 home runs, whatever the I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it was like a stupid high home run number. It's not sustainable. Even for guys who allow high home run numbers, it's like saying, oh, a guy's fast, so he's going to be able to keep up that 421 BABIP. No, like he'll keep up a higher BABIP than most, but that's not to say it's going to be this 100th percentile type of number. And that's what you're seeing with Taj Bradley earlier in the year. He's brought them down to more respectable numbers. He's keeping the BABIP low. He's stranding a lot of base runners, which could be something that does come back a little bit at 81%. But when you're this talented, you're going to see guys who are closer to, you know, quote unquote, ace level pitchers strand closer to 75, 80% than the usual 72, 74. So that doesn't really concern me. There's nothing really that concerns me with Taj Bradley, in all honesty. If the home runs become a serious problem again, I don't think it's going to be something that really affects him so much, unless it gets to a degree where everybody's just hitting the ball out of the yard. But he limits base runners like really, really well. 1.12 whip. He doesn't walk a ton of guys. I mean, it's not a great walk rate at 8.8%, but it's not like a crazy untenable type of number. So he's not allowing a ton of hits either. That combination there will mean that, yes, there will be some home runs. They're usually going to be solo shots or maybe 2-run bombs. If he gives up a 3-run or a grand slam, it's obviously really bad news. But I don't think that's something we can expect to see very often with Bradley going forward. This is a guy with ace-level stuff. He really does have ace-level stuff, and I just don't understand why people haven't been more interested in him. The raw stuff plus number is 115 this season. That's amazing. I see 62% on Yahoo, and I literally just don't even know. I don't have words. He was at 39% when I sent out that buy low tweet a while ago. I would have thought, based on the recent performance with the big strikeouts, he's been winning games. I would have thought that we see him jump up to 70%+. But if you are playing in shallow formats, you're still seeing Taj Bradley out there on the waiver wire. And I just think it's very, very foolish to look at this type of production with the very strong underlying numbers and say, well, he's potentially going to have a home run problem, so I won't pick him up. If that's the reason, because I don't see any other reason here, really. Everything else is pretty sterling. And when you see guys go on a run like this, when we've seen like Bailey Falter go on runs like this season, people pick him up. I'm not sure what it is exactly with Taj Bradley, but 62% is a ridiculously low number. And if you can still pick him up, if you're still finding him in your league, again, we've been saying this for a month plus now, but if you can find him, I would do anything you can to be picking him up because he's been just brilliant. Somebody else who has been brilliant, and it kind of flew under the radar for me a little bit here. I knew he'd been pretty solid, but Andrew Heaney's 10 strikeout game on the weekend kind of made me dig into him a little bit. Andrew Heaney has not given up more than 3 earned runs in and out and going back to April 25th. I would not have thought that. As somebody who writes notes on player notes every single night, pretty much recapping games, I would not have thought things have been this good for him. But really, it's 2 or 3 earned runs every start. The strikeouts, which were struggling earlier on in the year, have kind of come back to some degree. They're not like what you would hope for out of Andrew Heaney, because we have seen in the past like upper 20s, even into the 30s in his season with the Dodgers there. He's at like 23% right now, but the command has gotten very solid, where it has been kind of iffy in the past. 6% walk rate. He's got a 17.3 strikeout minus walk. Now, the fact that his ERA is still above 4 is kind of wild to me, just based on the fact that there hasn't been a blow-up start in a very long time. Earlier in the year, there was a 6 earned run start and a 4 earned run start, and I guess because there's not a lot of actual zeros in here, it doesn't bring it down all that much, but you're getting really, really consistent production from him. That 10 strikeout game was against the Orioles. It wasn't like he did it against some shitty team. 10 strikeouts, no walks. He allowed 2 earned runs on 5 hits over 7 innings in Baltimore. I think that he's pretty solid, to the point where if you are playing in a deeper league, because again, like those shallow leagues, I don't know if I really want to trust Andrew Heaney. But if you're in a deep 12 where pitching is really highly valued, you're in a 15-team league, AL only style, where it's just you need a little bit extra. You can't just be going with the usual top pickups. You need to be looking a little bit deeper. Andrew Heaney is somebody that I don't think a lot of people really get that excited about. He's 15% rostered on Yahoo, and yet he's a top 150 player for the last month. Those strikeouts are really key. The strikeouts coming back a little bit, and it wasn't just that 10 strikeout game. There was a 9 strikeout game against the Mets a couple weeks ago. Struck out 7 Marlins earlier in, I guess we're not in June anymore, but at the beginning of June there was 7 there. 5 against San Francisco. It hasn't been that bad. Whereas earlier in the season, he had 2 strikeouts April 8th. He had 1 on April 13th. He had 1 on May 23rd, 1 on May 28th. There was times where it's like, well, this guy who has had really strong strikeout rates in the past, it just disappeared. But I think he's solid enough where if you are looking for a streamer on a given night, based on the matchup, of course, like you're not going to pick him up against the Dodgers, most likely, unless you're feeling a little brave. But I think if you are seeing those pretty decent pitching matchups for him and you're seeing it's not in a crazy ballpark or whatever, I think that he's very solid in those shallower leagues. And when you're talking deeper leagues, I think he is pretty close to that must roster player type of territory. Really, really like what we've seen from him. And it's honestly, I don't think a lot of people would have expected what I said there. We have not seen an outing with more than 3 earned runs since April. It's now July. That's really good stuff out of anybody. But Andrew Heaney, I thought it was worth pointing out just because I don't think anybody was really expecting that. But let's talk about somebody who is a little bit more exciting, and that is James Wood. We mentioned over the weekend, or on Friday's show, I think he was in the 30s for roster rate. I believe he got up to 32, 33. My prediction was about 50 or 60% by the time he debuted, and it's actually higher than that. He got up to 64% on Yahoo. He is one of the more popular ads today. He went 1-for-4 in his debut. He was hitting the ball hard. We went over, I gushed about him last week on the show about how excellent the numbers are this year. They were already really great numbers last season, but he has just gone a whole other level this year in terms of cutting the strikeouts. The power's been great. The speed's been great. There's nothing really not to like in the profile with James Wood. He does look like somebody who could be a first-round type of fantasy player with that power and speed and the ability to hit for a high batting average. If you're still seeing him out there, and that's why we were kind of hammering it on Friday, because I didn't think he's going to be out there for very long, but it's up at 64. If he does anything tonight, I assume they're going to put him in the lineup tonight, although you never really know with the way teams deal with prospects. Sometimes it's a little strange, but he was a lefty who was in the lineup yesterday against the lefty, so I would assume that we do see him in the lineup tonight. The Mets pitcher tonight is another lefty. But I would think that based on that first game, it would be kind of stupid to sit him down here. We've seen a lot of weird stuff with prospects. Specifically, Toronto and Baltimore this year have been kind of annoying with their prospects. Maybe Toronto hasn't been so annoying. It's just more magnified for me as a Toronto native. But we've seen some weird stuff with prospects. Maybe he sits here and there. But I would really be surprised if James Wood isn't playing pretty much every single day. Maybe he gets the odd day off here and there like everybody. But is a guy I'd be comfortable setting into weekly lineups? Absolutely. Daily lineups, anything. All formats, points, categories, any league right now, James Wood, I think, is probably the top priority pickup just based on everything that he's been doing this season. He was slashing 353, 463, 595 in AAA. So I would be very surprised if he's not getting an everyday role here. It would make me shake my head, and maybe, I don't know, maybe just based on everything, we shouldn't be too surprised if we see that. But he deserves it. He absolutely deserves to just play every single day at this point. He more than proved it. I think he honestly could have made the team out of camp, and nobody would have been that surprised. Strikeouts were a little high last year, but he cut the strikeout rate 15%. There's really nothing else to prove here. James Wood should be an absolutely every single day type of guy if I was setting the lineup. And I think wherever you're playing, he is a must-roster player at this point. Let's talk about Brenton Doyle. Brenton Doyle, again, we talk about him every few weeks on the show here. People just get bored and drop him, and he's down at 64% now again. He's been hovering in like the 60 to 75, 80% range all year. And I love that whenever there's a little bit of a dip, he makes people regret it right away. Yesterday, it was two home runs and a steal, three runs scored, three ribbies. He is the number 64 player for the season as a whole, according to Yahoo. Nearly a top 100 player for the last month, top 40 for the last 2 weeks. What do people need to see to just keep him on the roster and stop making these dumb decisions? I get wanting to pick players up. I talk about it every day. There are players that are worthy of a pickup. Not at the expense of a guy who has 9 homers, 20 steals, 48 runs, and 30 ribbies, while batting 260 and hitting in an incredibly, incredibly hitter-friendly ballpark. I don't know what he has to do at this point. I really don't. And there's certain guys I've mentioned a few times, and I wonder, it's like, what do people need to, and he's the kind of the main one, him, Taj Bradley, Ryan O'Hearn, that's kind of like the big trio of mine. That's like, why are these guys available anywhere? Brenton Doyle is giving you more production than any of those guys have. And the roster rate, I think it might be, well, let me check O'Hearn. O'Hearn's probably, because he bounces around quite a bit as well. It wouldn't shock me if he's actually lower. Yeah, he is lower. Brenton Doyle is the most rostered guy out of this group. And he's providing you just so much every week. Every week, every 2 week span, however you want to break it down, he's been brilliant. And I don't know if I'm going to mention him too many more times because I don't want people to think it's like, oh, you're just repetitive, repeating the same names. I try and mix it up as much as possible. When you see massive standout performances and guys' roster rates are declining, I don't get it. I think Brenton Doyle is very comfortably a top 100 player rest of season, and he's going to finish. If you look at season-long totals, there's a chance he ends up as a top 50 overall player. We might get a 17-18 home run season with like 40 steals. He's going to push 100 runs, and he's going to hit in the 250 range, 260. This is somebody that needs to be rostered absolutely everywhere. He's been absolutely brilliant. And speaking of absolutely brilliant, Hunter Brown. I mean, Hunter Brown has just fully turned his season around. Over the last month, he is the number 5 ranked player overall, pitchers, position players, everybody. In those 37 innings, he has won, is it 6 straight starts or 5? No, so he's won 5 consecutive starts, 41 strikeouts in 37 innings with a .97 ERA and a .92 whip. We're nearly into the 3 range for his ERA. It's down at 4.07, and there was a time in the year, I'm going to see exactly what the high point was, but I believe he was over 10 at one point, at least into the upper 9s. So the peak ERA for Brown this season was, I guess if you're going to go back to really early, April 11th, it was 1644. And then it's honestly been progressively coming down every week, every appearance since. It went from 16 to 10 to 964 to 889 to 779, 770, 706. It was pretty bad, but it was progressively getting worse, progressively getting better every single time. 639 to 558 to 501 to 437, and now it's at 407. And we're at the point where Hunter Brown has been great for better than he was struggling to begin the season. It was like a couple weeks of struggles, and now it's been like 2 months of great production from him. Again, another guy that you're probably not seeing on a ton of waiver wires. He's up to 83% on Yahoo. I'm going to double-check ESPN because ESPN does have some pretty bizarre roster rates sometimes. A guy that should be like 100% is nowhere close to it. Hunter Brown is on ESPN at 74%. He's climbing there like he is everywhere. But if you're finding him even on shallow league rosters, this is a guy that I was really high on coming into the season. He has massive strikeout potential. He has a great lineup behind him. The raw stuff is really, really good. There's not a lot to not like, especially now we've got the rough patch out of the way. I don't know that there's any pitcher right now that I feel more confident when he takes the ball than Hunter Brown. It's insane. And, okay, like, if you're going to say, like, okay, him or Zach Wheeler, him or Chris Sale, like, I would go with those guys, but it feels like every time Hunter Brown is pitching, you're getting a shutout performance. You're getting 5 or 6 innings. Usually it's actually 6-plus innings. He hasn't gone below that 6-inning threshold going back since May 17th. So you're getting a quality start. You're getting a lot of strikeouts. He's won a lot of games in that time. I think that this is a situation where Brown is fully locked into himself as a major league pitcher. Like, he went through the struggles. He went through the terrible, terrible year last year. And then the beginning of this year was just awful. And I think that he's got the monkey off his back. And going forward, we are going to see, okay, he's not going to do this every time because nobody just shuts everybody out every single time. There will be stinkers. And if you see somebody the next time there's a stinker, like, let's say the next outing for Hunter Brown, which will come against the Twins next weekend. Let's say it goes poorly. Let's say he gives up 5 earned runs and he walks 4 batters. People are going to drop him again because that ERA, which is right now at 4.07, is going to jump up to the 4.40 range, hypothetically. And then you'd have people dropping him again. That would be a huge mistake. And if you do see anything like that for one kind of start, and it's the same thing like you mentioned with Mackenzie Gore. Like, Mackenzie Gore has been great. And then every time there's any kind of hiccup, people drop him. I think that Hunter Brown is probably going to be in that same category of, we're not fully bought in yet. People are more treating them as maybe a streamer. Maybe streamer is not the right word exactly, but not somebody that's solidified onto their roster. And if there is a bad outing from these guys, you tend to see them get dropped. I wouldn't expect it to be a lot of places because I think most people are still bought in on Hunter Brown. But even if it's not next week, even if it's 2-3 weeks from now, there are going to be people who look at the early season, who look back at last year's numbers, and still not be fully bought in. But I think at this point, it's hard to argue that there's 20 pitchers you trust more than Hunter Brown. For anybody, for me, it's probably even a shorter list at this point. But for the average person, I think if you're looking, putting together SP rankings rest of season, I'd be pretty hard to put him below like the 20-25 mark. For the July update, which will be out on Patreon in the next couple weeks, I think he'll probably be there in the 25 type of range, just eyeballing it. That's where he probably belongs, and I might even be selling him a little bit short. I think that he is just phenomenal. The sky's the limit for Hunter Brown, and if you're still seeing him on any waiver wires, please do go pick him up. Let's talk about Yariel Rodriguez, who had a really nice start on Canada Day for the Blue Jays. A tough loss for him, 6 2/3. We allowed 2 hits, struck out 6 batters. I'm still not really fully sold in the long run, though. As much as this is very encouraging, there hasn't been any consistency from him in the outings in the majors so far. Now, it has been kind of broken up. There was some in April, and then there was some in June, and it's been as a reliever a couple times. He's made a couple of starts. But I want to see a little bit more consistency before I'm willing to say that I want to add him anywhere outside of deeper leagues. First of all, the walks are still a problem as a whole. 13% walk rate is not going to be doing anything for you. It's really, really bad. He walked 2 yesterday. Most outings this season have been 2 or 3 walks. The 6 strikeouts is very nice, but there's also been times this year where he has not been able to get anybody to strike out, and that is showing itself with a 21.3 strikeout rate. If you look at the swinging strike, 10.2%, it doesn't really tell you that there's a ton coming here. Like, maybe we see a slight little increase from him, but I don't think we're going to get like a massive, massive strikeout rate. Anything higher than 23%, 24% at the most would really surprise me. Toronto's offense is also a joke, and there's a chance that they even get worse if they end up making the bad decision to trade Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero. This team could be like Marlins level bad in the second half if that happens. There's not going to be a lot of win potential. I just don't think there's really a lot going for him here if Toronto even decides to keep him in the rotation. Like, he'll probably make another start based on how he did there and the fact that Toronto is not exactly flush with options. But I don't think he's just a rest-of-season guy who's making 15 starts and he's going to give you like a 3-something ERA. There's going to be a lot of bumps and bruises here based on what we've seen so far. The early returns have been fairly mixed. Toronto gave him a 5-year contract, which was probably a mistake, which is not really surprising to anybody that Toronto is doing things that are a little strange. I think he can be okay. But at this point, he's a deep league streamer and not really much else more, unless we see 3 or 4 outings where he's able to maybe get the command under control a little bit better. Maybe we see the strikeouts come on a consistent basis. Then I'd be more interested. For right now, I think he's got to be relegated to a deep league streamer. Let's talk about David Peterson, who has been just... I talk about how hard Carlos Rodon is to analyze. and how he's probably about the hardest player to analyze in baseball, David Peterson is very much in that conversation as well. You'll see great outings from him, like yesterday, where he went 6 and a third. He allowed 2 earned runs, but he only had 2 strikeouts. The previous outing against the Yankees, 4 1/3, 1 run, 5 walks, and 8 strikeouts. I don't know what I'm getting on a day-to-day basis with Peterson. Sometimes it's going to be massive strikeout numbers, decent command. Sometimes it's going to be terrible command and okay strikeouts. Sometimes it's going to be none of each. Sometimes it's going to be lots of strikeouts and, you know, a bunch of walks. Like, it's just every time out, it's a big mystery box with him. The 3.51 ERA, it's not really telling the whole story here. 6.12 xERA, 4.63 xFIP, and a 4.74 Sierra. He has a 5.5 strikeout minus walk rate, and it's not a massive sample size, but 6 games started, 33 innings. It's enough where you can look at it and say, this is kind of concerning. He's always had the command problem. Every year he's been in the majors, even for the small sample sizes, it's always been a 10-plus percent walk rate. It's still at 9.6. It's not much different than the 10.2 from last year or the 10.6 the year prior. It's problematic. It's even more problematic when he's gone from 26, 27% strikeouts to 15, and it's backed up by that drop in swinging strike rate, which we talk about a lot. You can kind of double swinging strike rate, rule of thumb, to get like an expected strikeout rate. The last 3 years, 11, 12.8, 12.3%, and it's led to like a 25, 26, 27% strikeout rate. That generally makes sense. And now we're seeing a 15% strikeout rate with an 8% swinging strike, 8.7. Bad stuff. It's really, really bad stuff that you're seeing from Mr. Peterson. As much as I've liked him a lot, I don't think that there's a chance right now that he is a shallow league guy. I think that if he gets the strikeouts on a consistent basis, that's where you talk about him as more of a viable streamer. But for right now, I think that it's a deep league, specifically just a deep league play only. And even there, you might get a good matchup from him, and then he just gets shit on because he's just so unpredictable. I'd like to think that, you know, as he continues to grow, he'll improve. But this is his fifth year in the bigs at this point. If he doesn't get the strikeouts back pretty soon, it's gonna be pretty rough road for him. It's gonna be pretty rough for the Mets to keep him around. First of all, like, I know the ERA is solid right now, but if David Peterson doesn't strike anybody out, there's really no use for him as a major league pitcher. I know that sounds harsh, and I've been a big fan for all the years I've been making content. I've always been a David Peterson fan. But at this point, it's very deep leagues, streaming option only. And if you're playing in a 10 or a 12, he's up to 19% on Yahoo. It just feels like a mistake. Even with the Pirates due up next, it feels like there's a good chance this does not end terribly well for anybody. Let's talk about the popular pickups and drops of the day. And the number one ad is Jose Soriano. We're looking at more than 8,000 ads. So he is going to be returning from the IL. He's going to be starting against the Athletics tonight. He's been on the shelf for about two weeks now. He had an infection in his abdomen. I thought it was something to do with it. I didn't realize it was an infection. I thought he like took a shot there, or a ball, or something, strained it. I didn't realize it was an infection. But it doesn't scare me like that much. I think if we're looking at any other kind of injury, really, usually with pitchers, you're talking about an arm and you're worried about how they're going to be able to build themselves up. I don't really worry so much here. Soriano has been throwing a lot of long toss, 120 feet. So he might have a little bit of a restriction here, but it's not like he's coming back from a shoulder strain or a rotator cuff or a forearm or elbow or anything like that. So I think he's probably going to be, I mean, maybe they limit him to like 80 some odd pitches, but that's more than enough against a team like Oakland to do really good things. I've been a fan of Soriano this season. He's another one where there have been some inconsistencies, and it can be a little tricky to tell on a night-to-night basis what you're going to get. The strikeouts are not amazing. The command is not the best either. But against a team like Oakland, on a night where there aren't a ton of amazing options, I think that he's probably up there, maybe not the number one streaming option, but he's a definitely a really solid option for tonight. I got a lot of questions about Michael Mercado. His first start is going to be coming tonight at Wrigley against the Cubs. Again, like I've said this a lot, pretty much about every single guy that's debuted this season, I don't really want to touch them unless their name is Paul Skeens in terms of pitchers. He's just so unpredictable off the start. Maybe it's going to go well. Maybe it starts off well, and then all it takes is a couple of bad pitches for a young guy to really lose himself. With Mercado, he has decent numbers in the minors, lots of strikeouts, but ridiculous amount of walks, like 14, 12, 11% walk rate. The strikeouts in AAA this season have come down kind of drastically from where they have been in previous years, and we haven't really seen that walk rate come down along with it. Sometimes you see that. Strikeouts are way down, but he's also cut the walks. The strikeouts are down like close to 10%, and the walks are still in that same exact range. It's a spot start. I don't think there's really a lot here in the long run, and if you're just looking for today, I think there are some better options. This one is wild to me, but he was added, and he's up to 13% on Yahoo.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwood1, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwood1 now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwood1.
I think it's just too risky, and I think if you are picking him up and hoping for the best, maybe it happens, but if you're seeing guys on the wire, like we mentioned earlier, if you're seeing a Taj Bradley out there and you're thinking, I'll stream Mercado in or something, there's at least one of you who is in that situation. Not to say that you yourself picked up Mercado, but that people are picking him up in your league and Bradley's available. Don't make that mistake of falling into, I need the production today. Look a little bit farther in terms of that type of pickup. With Mercado, I don't think he stays in the rotation for very long. I think it's a spot start. I just don't know that there's going to be a lot here. Even with Turnbull out, even with Taijuan Walker not fully healthy at this point, I think that Mercado is probably somebody that's not terribly interesting. You look down the line a little bit, he's scheduled for a start against Atlanta on the weekend, so you're really playing with fire if you're putting him into a weekly lineup, and even in daily leagues, I just don't think there's a lot here, really. Sean Manaea is also a popular pickup. He's been okay this season. There have been some really good outings from him. As a whole, it's a 3.89 ERA, 1.30 whip. I think he's fine enough for deeper leagues tonight. He will take on Washington in Washington, but he's not somebody where I'm really hammering the ads across all formats type of thing. I think he's fine, but again, not somebody that I'm really terribly interested in tonight. Carlos Carrasco is also in the same group, not to get to the broken record part of the show, but I don't think Carlos Carrasco, even against a team like the White Sox, is somebody that I really want to trust. No strikeouts, horrid ratios. He's had a couple of decent starts as of late, But again, this is one of those situations where he did well against Toronto and Baltimore. So now you stick him in your lineup against the White Sox, and the White Sox will inevitably blow him up. It's just the way that fantasy works. Carlos Carrasco is not somebody that you can trust, and I'm seeing a lot of ads, more than 4,000 ads today. It just feels like a pretty bad mistake. The guy that I think is probably the best streamer is somebody that I've come to really like recently, and that's Simeon Woods-Richardson. He's facing Detroit in Detroit, or excuse me, not in Detroit, in Minnesota. Forgive me there, that's in Minnesota. But overall for the season, 3.41 ERA, 1.14 whip, 56 strikeouts in 66 innings. He's been very solid. There's not been any real massive blow-up starts. There's been a couple of subpar outings, but even when he hasn't been fully on his game, like last week against the Diamondbacks, 3 runs and 5 1/3 with 4 strikeouts, pretty dependable, pretty high floor streamer, I would say. Simeon Woods-Richardson is probably my favorite streamer for today. But there's kind of an exciting one to look out for tomorrow, and that's Christian Scott. Christian Scott is going to be getting called up to face the Nationals tomorrow. It's very nice to see him back. We haven't seen him in the majors since May 30th. I spent a ton of fab on him earlier in the season, held on to him in all the leagues where I did pick him up. I don't know if that was smart or not, but I spent like 25% of my fab budget on him. I couldn't give up after just a few starts. He had a 390 ERA, a 108 whip, 25 strikeouts in 27 innings. I think he's fairly built up. I haven't heard anything along the lines of he's going to be limited or whatever. I think he's been pitching in the minor leagues. I know there was a small stretch where he wasn't pitching. I think they did momentarily kind of shut him down. It's a very tough year for rookies and prospects and evaluating them. But at the AAA level this season, 42 innings, 9 games started. He has a 2.76 ERA, 26% strikeout minus walk rate. He's a very good pitcher. I don't know how this is going to affect him, if this is going to affect him at all, really, being down in the minors for a while, if that messes with your head or whatever. But I think that he is worth a pickup. There's a chance that Christian Scott could be a very, very interesting rest of season play, as long as the Mets don't do anything too crazy here. Because there's a chance, like, they haven't committed to using him beyond this start. They sent down Tyler McGill the other day. Oh, Tyler, we won't get into Tyler McGill today, but they sent him down. They brought up Scott. I think that there's a good chance he stays up. And at this point, it's like, why would you not just keep him up? He's 25 years old. It's not like he's Yuri Perez, 19, 20 years old, and you got to baby him along. He's been in the minors since 2021. I think it's just time already. He's well proven that he belongs. It's time to just bring him up and let him stay up. And I do think that if he's out there, he could be a really interesting add. It just depends on how he's used. I think, like, we talked with James Anderson on the show last week, RotoWire's senior prospect analyst and editor, and we talked a lot about Christian Scott, and there was an outline of 17 players we went over, and I believe that we were both more interested in Christian Scott going forward than most of the guys on the list. Like, we had Skeens and we had Luis Gil and those types, Jared Jones on the list, but in terms of the guys that weren't getting so much love this year, we were both really big fans of Christian Scott for next season. The underlying skills are really, really great. It's just a matter of, are the Mets going to mess around here? Or are the Mets just going to bring him up and let him play? And that's kind of the theme of the day here with Kjerstad and with, not so much with Wyatt Langford, but we're talking about a couple of these rookies that, and even with James Wood to some extent, like, are they going to just let them play? Are they going to mess around and send them back down or put them on the bench or something? So for all the rookies we talked about today and every day, let's just hope that these guys are just allowed to stay in the majors and do what they should be able to do, which is produce. Speaking of producing at the major league level, Mark Vientos, his roster rate has gone back up after a small dip. He was into the 60s. What happened here? He's down at 56% despite being a top 30 player the last 2 weeks, top 80 player for the last month, and for the season as a whole. 136 at-bats is a very small sample. 10 homers, 26 ribbies, and a .301 batting average. I don't know why he's out there, first and third base eligible, playing every single day for the Mets. He gets maybe one day off a week, and even then, it's not always he gets a day off. Sometimes he plays every single game. First and third, 56% rostered, middle of the order type of guy. I don't know why he's out there. If you need any corner infield help, I think Mark Vientos is pretty close to the top pile or top of the pile here. Let's go to the drops. The number one drop of the day is David Peterson, as it should be, more than 5,000 drops. We're talking 10 and 12 team leagues on Yahoo. I think he's debatable in a 15 team league. 10 and 12 team leagues, there's just no place for him. This one came across literally 5 minutes ago on the wire as I am recording, but Isaiah Kiner-Falefa was placed on the injured list with a left knee sprain, just what the Blue Jays needed. He had been batting .292. He had 7 homers, 3 steals. He had been occasionally at the top of the order. He'd been really great and honestly probably the best signing the Blue Jays made this offseason. If you have an IL spot, it doesn't seem like it's terribly serious, a knee sprain. It's not what you want to hear, really, but he's not like somebody who's been running a lot, hasn't stolen a base in the last month, has 3 for the year. He's been effective with the bat, and it's shocking to look at those, you know, last 2 weeks, last month kind of rankings. He's a top 90 player for the last month. He's the number 30 ranked player for the last 2 weeks, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. He's been excellent, and with that eligibility, second, third, short, and in the outfield, I think that he is somebody where if you have the room to hold on, you hold on. But he's not such a game changer where you're using an active bench spot for him and saying that I'm going to kill roster space for IKF. I think that if you have an IL space, or I mean, I guess if you're comfortable for a week span just killing that bench spot, you do it. But I think in those really shallow leagues where your IL is packed, like most of us, our IL does not have any free space on it, you're pretty comfortable just sending him back to the wire in like 10, and I think in shallow 12-teamers. In the slightly deeper formats, I have him in my Tout Wars lineup. I have him in a few NFBC leagues. He's not getting dropped. He's not getting dropped there because those are deeper leagues where there's not a lot of options, especially versatile position-wise who are producing. But in 10-teamers, I think, like, yeah, if you don't have the space, it's a pretty reasonable drop. He's trending towards being the most popular drop of the day. Bryce Wilson, I don't know why Bryce Wilson was even added. There was a couple of decent starts for him, but this is not a guy who is a terribly good pitcher. I don't think really at all. And people picked him up ahead of a Coors outing, which was just bizarre, and they got what they deserved because he gave up 5 runs in 4 innings. Easy drop. I don't know why he was rostered anywhere. He's not a strikeout guy. He doesn't give you good ratios. There's nothing here with Bryce Wilson. It's a very, very easy drop. And the same thing with James Paxton. It was time for him to get absolutely destroyed, and that absolutely happened on Sunday. 9 runs on 12 hits with 2 walks. He's not good. We've been saying this for a while. He's been getting by based on some very, very, very kind advanced numbers. The BABIP has been very low, strand rate very high. He does not strike out batters anymore. The walks are through the roof. He's been terrible, truly. James Paxton has been just dreadfully awful this season, and it's not really reflected in the numbers how bad he has been, but we started to see that correcting itself with thanks to the Giants there for helping some people realize that Paxton is not somebody that they need to be holding on to. So that one is a very easy drop for me in all formats. He did have a nice little stretch there where there was a couple of games, White Sox, Colorado, and Texas, where he did very well. But this is a guy where there's just no consistency. The only thing going for him is the team context. And even that is something that can kind of be back and forth. And some days they're not, some days they're good. We've mentioned it a few times, but Tyler Glass now for that same team this year went a full month without getting a single run of support. So it's not like you can roster Paxton and say, I'm getting a win every single week at least. Like, no, it's not the case. You might go a month without a win. And the way he's pitching, you might go the rest of his career without a win. It's really, really bad stuff. The last drop we're going to talk about is Tristan McKenzie. This one has been coming for a while. I don't know why they're sending him down to AAA as opposed to just operating on him. He does have a partially torn UCL unless there has been some change in that diagnosis. They sent him down to AAA after he was absolutely destroyed by Kansas City. He's actually been destroyed by pretty much everybody recently. He's a 5.11 ERA, 1.56 whip, 74 strikeouts, and 75 innings. Do a procedure on him. Do something. Because doing this same thing at AAA, it's not like he's just getting overmatched. It's just simply that he's not very good right now. And I think it does come down to that injury in his elbow. It's not going to get magically fixed by facing a bunch of 20-year-olds who are still developing. I think that Cleveland is typically a very smart organization with pitching, and they're not going to make terrible decisions like this very often. But I would expect that over the next few weeks, maybe a couple months, we'll see him undergo some kind of procedure, whether it's the brace procedure, Tommy John. The medical stuff is a little out of my pay grade. But there needs to be something done other than just sending McKenzie down. Of course, in any league, IL, minor league spots, whatever, he's a very easy drop. I think he was a drop a few weeks back. He just hasn't been doing a damn thing for you. And with the injury, hard to expect there to be much of a turnaround. But that will do it for us, guys. I really appreciate all you bearing with my break over the weekend. I know it's very weird for there not to be a show for me to start the week, but it was the Canada Day holiday, and I did want to just kind of relax a little bit. So I appreciate all of you guys bearing with me there if you guys want to keep up with what's going on. Going to be getting right back into the mix tonight with my writing. over at JoeOrico99 over on Twitter. We're going to have a nice fat quick hits session tonight with the extended quick hits, of course, for subs over on Patreon. If you guys are interested in checking out the Patreon, looking for some more fantasy baseball work or supporting me, you get to do both by checking out that link in the description of the episode. But that will do it for us today, guys. We will see you again tomorrow. But until then, take care. Have a great night.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.